Later today, one of baseball's most famous and successful clubs, the best lineup in the game, faces elimination against an upstart wild card team trying to exercise a franchise-long history of playoff frustration. Yet relatively few are focused on that St. Louis Cardinals-Houston Astros series because Armageddon is scheduled for 8:19 tonight in the Bronx. The Boston Red Sox won three in a row to force an improbable Game 7 against the New York Yankees for the AL Championship. Much of the East Coast reported to work bleary-eyed and spent this morning after the latest thriller last night. If you want to talk about either series, any of the controversies, or about the anxieties that afflict everyone involved, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address, TOTN at NPR.org. Our baseball pal Alan Schwartz is lucky enough to have a seat in the press box by virtue of his jobs as senior writer for Baseball America and columnist for the Sunday New York Times, and he joins us now from Yankee Stadium. Alan, good to have you back on the show.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here, Neil. Thanks for having me again.
And I understand, before we go on, you're reporting from underneath George Costanza's desk.
I was just thinking. I think I just found his alarm clock here on the side. No, I'm under the desk here at the here in the press box because Yankee Stadium is not the place to have the best sound quality right now, but we're doing our best to keep the NPR airwaves clean.
Now, before we go gaga about the drama there in the Bronx later tonight, these National League playoffs have simply been brilliant.
Oh, it's been wonderful, and everyone knew that people were going to forget about the National League, at least people not in Houston and St. Louis. But let's face it, those clubs have some great storylines, too. In Houston, you have Jeff Bagwell and Craig Biggio, two longtime Astros in this era of, you know, roster hopscotch in baseball. They've been around for a long time with a chance now to play in their first World Series. You know, St. Louis has that incredible lineup. Scotty Rowland, one of the most classy players the game will ever see, one of the great lineups. Tony La Russa, an interesting-to-watch manager. So, you know, there's great stuff, and people are thinking that tonight's Yankee-Red Sox game is the end of the line. It ain't. You got a World Series coming up, too.
Jeff Kent hit a game-winning walk-off home run the other day. It's as if it almost didn't happen.
Well, I don't want to necessarily say that because, of course, I've been covering the Yankees-Red Sox series, and so I don't want to, you know, really be disrespectful to people who care more about the Astros and Cardinals. It's just that more people care about the games here on the East Coast right now, but I don't want to take away any of the fun from the other folks.
Now, if the Astros do win tonight, former Red Sox and Yankees ace Roger Clemens would start Game 1 of the World Series in either Fenway Park or Yankee Stadium, so that's what's at stake in St. Louis today.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I got to tell you, there is so much focus on Roger Clemens because of the New York bias in the press and also the East Coast bias. Frankly, I don't think it's that interesting. I really don't. I think that the other stories with the clubs, whether it's the Bagwell and Biggio story, whether it's Brad Lidge, the brilliant young closer for Houston, or a lot of the St. Louis storylines, I think are just as compelling. They're just not as obvious to people outside of New York.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the other elderly ace pitcher, this time still pitching for the Red Sox, Curt Schilling, who put on a performance last night. We could see in those dramatic cutaway shots the blood gushing through the sock covering his ankle.
Well, that was a truly red sock, I guess, huh? You know, I mean, Curt Schilling last night gave us our generation's Willis Reed moment. He really did. He wasn't limping around quite as much as Willis did in the NBA Finals. Was it 69 or 70? Or
it was actually played in 1970, yeah.
70, right, the 69-70 season. I mean, I was 2 years old when that took place, and this is now my version of that. And it was extraordinary to watch. It's extraordinary to know the man the way I do, and to watch him do what he did, and to be so stunned afterwards and, frankly, thankful that he had the opportunity to give us all something so memorable. I think he was pretty stunned himself and honestly humbled by the good fortune that he was afforded by the turn of events with being able to pitch and being able to pitch as well as he did. And it's why we watch, you know. And these last two baseball postseasons have been so magical. I think we're going to start getting greedy. I mean, tonight might be, you know, an 8-0 blowout, and everyone's going to wonder what went wrong. But that happens in baseball.
I should point out that Willis Reed hit his first two shots in that Game 7 against the Los Angeles Lakers that year and did very little else in that ballgame. Walt Frazier deserves the credit for winning that game, though Reed gave the emotional lift. Schilling pitched seven fabulous innings last night. The last five, it seemed, on fumes.
Well, sure, I guess Mark Bellhorn is our generation's Walt Frazier because he was the guy who hit the three-run home run last night that maybe people won't remember because they'll remember Curt Schilling. But, you know, the great thing about baseball is there isn't a lot of time to dwell on what happened last night. Tonight is another game. It is now the climactic game. It's the game that we've waited you know, 12 months to see. And no one knows how it's going to go. No one knows how the pitching's going to hold up. No one even knows really who's pitching yet. Presumably the pitchers know, but it's been a secret to just about everybody until about another hour or two till the manager's press conferences. So, you know, these are two prize fighters who have been beating each other's brains out for the past week, let alone the past year. They're evenly matched, and it's as if each of them is now down on the canvas, and the referee is counting up to 10. It's which one is going to stand up, let alone knock the other one down. They're both down now.
Let's get some callers involved in the conversation. Joe is with us from Portland, Oregon.
Howdy.
Hi there.
I would like to suggest that the biggest story last night was a demonstration of the power of reasoned discourse when people of goodwill seek the truth through the process of consensus. And the umpires showed us that two times, and it was really, really remarkable.
For those who weren't watching, it was the Bellhorn home run. First questioned whether it was actually out or not. The umpires gathered, consulted, and made the right decision. The other, the controversial play where Alex Rodriguez, running up the first baseline, knocked the ball out of the pitcher's mitt. And at first, he wound up on second. Derek Jeter was on first base at the time, wound up scoring. Well, he was called out for interference, and Derek Jeter was returned to first base.
And the television replay made it very clear in both cases that they had come to the right decision, having initially the person closest to it calling it wrong and being willing to listen and reason and go ahead and do the right thing.
I totally agree with you. I think that one of the greatest things that's happened to baseball in the past 4 or 5 years is the reforms that were done with the umpires. And the person to credit for that is Sandy Alderson in the commissioner's office. He made one of his express jobs to fix the strike zone, which was completely out of whack in the late 1990s. He restored it to its proper state and also made sure that umpires didn't consider themselves above the game. They realized, look, if we make a mistake, we have to get together, we have to fix it. Baseball does not need instant replay. All you need to do is have common sense. Like you said, reasoned discourse, and chances are things are going to work out the way they should. But the announcers last night were saying, gee, we don't know where this came from. You know, it's been 4 or 5 years. It seems to have changed. Thanks, Sandy Alderson in the commissioner's office.
Amen.
Joe, thanks for the call.
You bet.
Alan, why are the games in the American League, or a couple of them went into extra innings, but these games are really a lot longer than the National League games?
It's very simple. Two things. One, there's more offense in the American League because of the designated hitter. Actually, three reasons. Second of all, you have two clubs, particularly the Red Sox, who use as strategy the art of taking pitches. And so generally you'll have 20 to 30 more pitches per game in a Red Sox game than any other. And the Yankees are pretty patient, too. So you have a lot more pitches per batter, regardless of whether those batters get on base or not. And third, something that a lot of people forget, in American League Baseball, because there's a designated hitter, there are many more between-inning pitching changes, or you know, mid-inning pitching changes, as opposed to pinch hitting, and then the pitcher will come in and warm up during the commercial break. Doesn't happen as much in the American League, particularly in the playoffs, where every out matters and you have a lot more managerial machinations. And so that takes an extra minute, minute and a half, 2 minutes per pitching change, and that takes place a lot in the playoffs.
Is it my imagination, or are there more commercials between innings in the playoffs?
Probably, though I don't have the data to prove that. I think that the prescribed time in between innings is 2.5 minutes, I think. I can't say one way or the other. I do know that one of the most dispiriting parts of watching postseason baseball are those insipid Fox ads for their fall schedule. If I see another, my big, fat, obnoxious network ad, I think I'm going to scream.
We're talking with Alan Schwartz of Baseball America and the New York Times. His new book is The Numbers Game, Baseball's Lifelong Fascination with Statistics. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now let's talk with Steven. Steven's calling from Hartsville, South Carolina.
Yeah, I got a question for you. I was wondering when the last time two wild card teams faced each other in the World Series.
It was 2 years ago when the Giants and the Angels.
I didn't realize that, but I also want to make a comment. I think the umpires done a real good job last night in the Red Sox Yankees game. And, you know, on those two calls, I think they did a good job of, you know, getting together and talking it over and making the right call.
Well, Steven's point about the wild card teams, though, Alan, and thanks for the call, Steven, Is it too easy for the wild card teams? I mean, the world champion has been a wild card team, what, the last 2 years in a row?
Yeah, and the Florida Marlins won in 1997 as well. I mean, too easy, obviously, that's an extremely subjective thing. I mean, do you want to have a situation in the baseball playoffs where each team has just about an equal shot, depending on the home field advantages, meaning a 1 out of 8 shot, because there are 8 teams in the playoffs, or do you want to have the teams who finish the regular season best have a significant advantage? Now, baseball is a sport where a 5 or even 7-game series does not really ensure victory for the quote-unquote better team. Even just regardless of the sport, just if you're flipping a coin, okay, if you have a team that is a 60% favorite in each game, not to go all binomial probability on everyone here, but if you have a 0.6 or 60% chance of winning each game, over a 7-game series, your chances of winning are only 71%. You know, 29% of the time, the team that's a 3-2 underdog is going to win. And baseball is a sport also where anything can happen because of the nature of the game, because of pitching and whatnot. And so you'd really need like 11 or 15-game series to have the kind of assurance that people typically want. But that's why baseball's interesting. You never know what's going to happen in October. When a team is favored, it really doesn't mean as much as people think.
And if the series were that long, we'd be playing with snow shovels. Let's get a call in from Joe, who's calling from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yes, how you doing?
All right.
I had a question, and I wanted to follow up with a comment. First off, the play at first base with Rodriguez interfering, was that played on the Jumbotron for the fans?
Yeah, the fans were certainly upset, Alan.
Yeah, I don't. To be honest with you, I was paying attention to the replay. I don't know if it was showed on the Jumbotron. Typically teams try to avoid showing plays that will incite the crowd, which clearly this one would and did. So my guess is it wasn't showed over and over if it was. To be honest, anyone who saw it saw that it was a play on Rodriguez's part that was against the rules, and all it did was corroborate that the umpires were correct.
Right. I would have thought that the replay in the stadium would have maybe calmed the crowd rather than incite the crowd.
Yankee Stadium crowds are not known for their, you know, reasoned interpretation of facts. They typically will be a little more emotional. And, I mean, you saw Derek Jeter in the dugout saying, you know, safe, safe, shaking his head, shaking his head, shaking his head. I mean, when you have an emotional stake in the game, you're not going to, you know, pay that close attention to what truly occurred.
Mm-hmm. And your comment, Joe?
Well, it was going to be, you know, based on the question, on the answer to that question as to whether or not they saw that, it was somewhat disappointing to see that much of an emotional response if they could, in fact, have seen the factual, you know, replay showing that the umpires eventually did get it right. So that was just my observance that it was a shame to have to see them bring out the riot police because of such a, you know, a reaction.
Let's face it, the fans get what they deserve, and it's not just New York fans. There were incidents in the past couple of years of the fan jumping out of the stands in Chicago and beating up a coach. You had incidents this year, of course, with the Texas pitcher down the right field stands, throwing the chair into the stands. Everyone talks about how athletes have changed. No one talks about how, as much as athletes have changed, so have the fans, and they can really get obnoxious. And frankly, they get what they deserved. And I love the fact that they came out with the riot gear last night, and they basically said, you know, don't even think it.
Yeah, we take that very seriously. Yeah.
Calm things down. And good for Major League Baseball for making sure it didn't get out of hand. No one ever talks about when they get it done right. They only talk about when it seems to boil over.
Joe, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Alan Schwartz, well, who knows what's going to happen tonight and whether it can possibly top anything that has happened. Was it last year? Some obscure third baseman had a home run in the 12th inning. So we could have that again. Alan Schwartz, thanks very much, as always, for being with us. Have a good time tonight.
It's my pleasure. Take care, Neil.
Alan Schwartz of Baseball America and the New York Times, also the author of The Numbers Game, Baseball's Lifelong Fascination with Statistics, speaking with us from Yankee Stadium in New York. In Washington, which should have a team next year, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.